Hey guys, welcome to the Choose FI Radio podcast. Today on the show, we're going to talk about this past week's episode with David and Alin from Raptitude and Free to Pursue. We're going to try to bring in some of your feedback, and we're going to really highlight different ideas, comments, and voicemails from the community. Sarah has a DIY breakthrough. Daniel shares his hacks for electronics. Jacqueline got a pay decrease and used it as an incentive to find a new gig. Steven shares how he can use donor advised funds to avoid capital gains tax. And Kevin has updates on building a health insurance company. Welcome to the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show. This is your Friday Roundup.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
This is going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to dive into the episode with David and Alin. But before we did that, I actually had a couple updates personally. Now, if you've been listening to the show for the last couple months, you know that one of the things that I've been doing is slowly going through my different line items of insurance and looking for ways to optimize. And I recently got a very competitive quote on life insurance. And something else that I've been looking at was my homeowner's insurance. The bill has been slowly creeping up for the last several years. And now I'm paying $90 a month for homeowner's insurance. And you actually prompted me and told me that this was a pretty inefficient way to do it. And that in our specific area, our local area of Richmond, there was a company that doesn't do a lot of advertising, but they just have mind-boggling rates and really, really great service. It's Mutual Assurance of Virginia. And I checked them out and I went through this kind of long process to actually get approved. They're very selective apparently with who can actually get in. But I just found out a few days ago that I am in.
Yeah, Jonathan, that's great. Congratulations. Yeah, when I heard you were paying $1,000 a year for your homeowner's insurance for a similar house to mine in the Richmond area, I was really, really surprised because, I mean, I was with just like a standard carrier, like a, I think it was MetLife, and I was paying maybe like $550 a year. And I was actually somewhat displeased with that. So yeah, when I heard you're $1,000 a year, I knew immediately you could save money essentially with almost any other carrier in all likelihood. But
you could throw a dart at the wall and probably do better than you're doing right now.
That is fairly accurate. But yeah, a buddy of mine, Blake, who actually listens to this podcast, he told me about this company, Mutual Assurance Society of Virginia. And I had remembered deep in the recesses of my memory banks, a coworker of mine told me about it about 10 years ago. And he's like, this is this company nobody's ever heard of. They've been in existence, I think, literally since the 1600s. I mean, no joke, like I'm actually at their website. And I think this company literally has existed since colonial America, like late 1600s, early 1700s. Like that's the kind of history they have. They're very, very stringent on who gets to be approved. Evidently, they only allow a certain number of houses on each block. You have to go through this rigorous process. But long story short, at the end of it, you get these remarkable, remarkable rates. So they are very tough on the front side, the underwriting side, and then you get these lowered rates. So it's a win-win for everybody. And yeah, my rate dropped, I mean, dramatically. So, I mean, it almost dropped in half, and that's on only $550 a year as it was. So it was a big win for me. And yeah, I'm glad you looked into it, Jonathan. So you said you got in, right?
Yeah, they just approved me. Now I do have to make a couple changes. They told me I needed to put steel braided cords in connecting my washer and dryer to the wall. And then also the water line that goes to the fridge, if it was copper, it had to be subbed out for the steel braided line as well. I actually went to Lowe's to go get these cords to set it up so that I could finish the process. And the guy there was super impressed that I was proactively doing this and said that everybody needed to do this, as it's just an incredibly cheap way to prevent a repair that would normally be very expensive on the other end. So now that I've done that, though, they're basically telling me that the first year it's going to cost like $1,500. It's a little bit more. It's like a buy-in or a membership, that type of thing. But then after that, every year for renewal, it's going to be like around $300 a year total for insurance. So it literally, I'm looking at saving around $700 a year just by making this one change. And it literally blew my mind. So it's very rare that you actually get so excited about an insurance company that you like want to tell every single person in your immediate social circle about it. But this one fits the bill.
Yeah. And Jonathan, $700 a year on a $30,000 a year total budget. I mean, that's 2%+, right? So it's not insignificant in any way, shape or form in total dollars or percentage of your total expenses. And of course, we're talking about something in Virginia here. This isn't applicable to everybody, but what is applicable and why we're spending time on this is you always have to look at your bills. Don't just sleepwalk. The rate creep is insidious. And you just kind of go along with inertia. So what I would say for everybody out there is even annually, just look at your rates for everything from your cable and internet package to your insurance to, you know, whatever, your garbage disposal, whatever it may be, even if it's a small line item, and just make a couple calls. Just like I put that in Todoist now. Every single year, I make these calls and I figure out, hey, am I close? Is it worth changing? And it's really simple. It's just a couple minutes. That probably takes me less than an hour. And for me, I think that's time well spent.
You know, Brad, going back to this past week's episode on Monday, I've had this epiphany lately, or like this realization that in this particular stage of my life, I realized that the book reports that I did as a kid that I was always trying to get out of, I've now made a lifestyle around doing that. So as I'm digging through David and Alin's content, really preparing for that episode, and I'm just kind of blown away. The content that we're producing, the episode that we put together, directly relates to that initial skill set of being able to read something and then turn it into a conversation and relate it to a new audience, a new person. You know, maybe in the case of school, it was a teacher or a paper that you had to write or whatever else, but like it's that same skill set. And I remember marginalizing it and thinking that it was a waste of time, but it's been the most useful skill set of my entire career. And that includes, you know, all of that work that I did for pharmacy school that I'm now, that skill set that I'm not using right now. This is what it really comes down to: my ability to put the time in and do a book report.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to just learning in general, right? And cutting through the noise, cutting through the clutter. I think, is that what you're getting at? You're able to cut through and really look at hundreds of articles that someone's producing and pull out the gems that you think would be worthwhile for the audience. Like, is that what you're talking about, Jonathan?
Exactly. Exactly. And also it makes it a second generation FI conversation in that it's sometimes hard to see the value of something, at least on the front end, when you're just doing the grunt work. And I'm not talking about going and citing and making sure that all your references are in place. Like, I still think that is an incredible waste of time. Maybe it's important from like some sort of plagiarism perspective, but from an applicable, use it in your own life. But the idea of going into content and then pulling out those actionable takeaways and then being able to regurgitate that is probably one of the most critical life skills that you can develop, you know, in your early teens and in your young adulthood. And certainly now in my 30s, I find myself using it more and more. And I think that in many cases, if you even go back a step with regards to David and Alin, they're doing the same thing, right? I mean, they're looking at a problem that they've had in their life, something that they've struggled with, and then they're going back and they're doing research and they're trying to figure out a way to work through these different issues. And what became apparent to me at the end of this episode is that, like we've been saying, FI is a superpower. And it's not always like, it's not easy to explain what that means at face value. But when you start looking at, you know, the Venn diagram that we talked about Monday and all the different ways that having this financial security and this confidence and this intentional lifestyle, all the different aspects of your life that it seeps into, you start to slowly get this picture of, wow, I am a person that is setting myself up for success, not just in my financial aspect of my life, but in every aspect of my life. And I'm moving from being a lamb that can be fleeced to a lion that approaches every interaction with confidence and with a strategy.
Yeah. And I think Ellen's point, like you said, about the lion and the lamb, that one really stuck out to me. This sense of confidence and competence in life, it just pervades everything. And I think just this learning, right? It's tying into both what you're saying and what Ellen is saying with just constantly learning. I think that is a hallmark of the FI community. I know I actually had a kind of a case in point this last week that I didn't think of until the last 30 seconds. So this was a case where, because of the reading that I do in this whole sphere, which is just kind of like life optimization, I read a lot of these books, especially on behavioral economics. I was actually sitting at, you know, we always joke about my pool, but I was at a swim team board meeting this last week, and an issue came up where we were talking about volunteers, and we need people to volunteer at these swim meets. And that's just kind of like table stakes for being on the team. But some people just, of course, they don't show up sometimes. And we were trying to find ways to combat that. And people were talking about fining them. Okay. And I actually immediately thought back to, like Jonathan, you're saying about learning and pulling out these actionable techniques, about this book that I read by Dan Ariely called Predictably Irrational. And there was a chapter there that was incredibly powerful on social norms. I thought back to that and I made this argument that based on social norms, it's a terrible idea to combine volunteerism with a monetary aspect and potential fines. So I was able to convincingly argue that this was not a great idea and that we shouldn't move forward in that manner because social norms are so much stronger. And that came directly from reading that I did because I'm in this larger Phi community and I'm in this larger sphere where I want to improve my life. So I just thought that was a really cool takeaway. And yeah, I'm glad actually you jogged my memory, Jonathan. That was great.
That's what I'm here for, buddy. I just try to set it up so you can just crush it.
Well, thank you.
The stars have to align. It's like the best possible case scenario where you find yourself in a social interaction situation where you're able to directly draw a message that you just got and you just like figured out how to implement in your own life and then regurgitate that in the exact social scenario that you find yourself in. That has to feel like winning.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. And I read that book, I think, over a year ago at this point. And that's just the talent stack, Jonathan, that we're always talking about. It's not this overt, like, oh, I need to get better to show off to my friends. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with getting to be a more well-rounded, well-versed person, right? So I think that's where the talent stack that we're constantly talking about comes into play. And yeah, this was just a kind of a unique example, certainly, but one that I was happy that I could give back to the swim team in just this little way by something that I read a year ago.
So we got a comment from Katie on the blog this week, and she said, I love the call out on the diamond industry, a message that can't be spread too far or wide. The only way in which a diamond is superior to all other stones is its hardness, and this is scratch proofness, not shatter resistance. I don't have it or the relationship it represented anymore, but I loved going with a lab-created alexandrite for my engagement ring. It changes color depending on the lighting. How cool is that? In that way, I was definitely on the road less traveled. Now, there are a lot of different diamond alternatives, cubic zirconium, white sapphire, lab and original origin, white topaz, and masonite, I think I said that right, super sparkly space rock, to name a few. One further thing to consider, if you can't have an honest conversation with your potential spouse about the engagement ring and the materials that make it up, is your relationship really ready to take that next step? And it's 100% fine if you decide to go with a diamond, as long as you go into it with your eyes wide open. You know, I think this mirrors my own perception of, the diamond industry. I'm not like incredibly anti-diamond. My wife does have a diamond ring, but it was a relatively modest affair, especially on the spectrum. It certainly wasn't 4 months of my life that went into acquiring it to really show that I truly loved her, as opposed to it just being a token engagement ring. I do think that marketing has just, this is like the prime example of the number that marketing has done on us. And I think that like, if you're listening to this episode and you're feeling very defensive about it, like I'm not telling you to go sell your ring, but I think that might be a blind spot for you. Like legitimately, does the dollar amount that was spent on the ring, does that define you? And why does that define you? Why does that define your love? I think that it really is just a valuable conversation that deserves a second just to have a hole poked in it and really evaluate it. Because the reality is the sunk cost of diamond rings, you're not going to go sell this and get a great return on it. That's what you'll find out very quickly. When you go to resell these things, it's going to have very little resale value. But the other half of that is like, what does it mean for you now to have your eyes open for the future? And what does it mean like now that you have this raw example of what marketing can do when you're overwhelmed by it and society has backed it up for several decades now, what does it mean for you when you go into this next thing that you just have to have because society tells you you have to have it?
Yeah. And I think that's the big takeaway. And this is not us picking on the diamond industry. I mean, they've done a masterful job with advertising and more power to them, I guess. Both our wives have diamond rings and that's fine. But it's more that social construct that we've like, for some reason, Now, this is a part of our societal landscape, right? Like, everybody has to get a diamond ring. And to your point, it's try to find those other ways where society says, right? And try to outsmart it or outthink it. And I think that, to me, like, I don't have any perfect example right now, certainly, but I think we should always have our eyes open to what is a marketing machine and what's actual reality. If you went and bought the most ornate cubic zirconia ring and just pawned it off as a diamond, right? Like, not to your spouse, obviously, I'm not talking about lying to them, but just as like a fun game, just play a game and get one of those rings and then have your significant other, your fiance or your spouse, just show people it as a diamond. I guarantee you there'll be oohs and ahs, right? Because nobody can tell the difference, because to the layman, there is no difference. So that, to me, suggests, okay, this is all marketing. So I think it's like, find those examples where, hey, maybe I'm getting caught up in this marketing, and see what you can do to combat it. I think that's the big takeaway.
And Brad's point is not to try to fool a bunch of people. For those of you that just latched onto that individual item, this is not to trick all of your friends and neighbors, but rather just to point out that that would be true. If you did do that, nobody knows. It doesn't change your life. Your neighbor is not a diamond enthusiast that spends all of their time evaluating which ones are real and which ones are fake. That's ludicrous. It's obviously ludicrous. And just being able to look at that objectively. You know, in my mind, the reason that this episode resonated with me so much in particular was David's thoughts on the velvet rope versus the red carpet. And I've never really verbalized it that well, but that is how I have to frame my life. I am a lazy individual that wants to pick the path of least resistance in almost every single area. That's just my nature. And so, in many cases, that works against me. It works against my health. It works against my weight. It works against my productivity. It works against really all these different aspects of my life. It's not in my best interest, but from a energy perspective, conserving energy perspective, that seems to outrule most of my decisions. I go with the easy choice, and it sets me up for the consequences down the road. I don't get the work done I need to get done. I'm constantly behind. I'm slightly overweight. I'm all these different things. And to be honest with you, you know, getting hyped up for 5 or 10 minutes, that's not enough for me. It's not enough to keep you going week in, week out, month in, month out. I need something more. And I've always done it. I just never had a language to use to describe it. The velvet rope and the red carpet is absolutely what I do. And anytime I've gotten good results, it's because I have put this little bit of separation between things that I don't want to do, and I've lowered the barrier to entry to encourage things that I do want to do.
Yeah, I think David's point and his quote was, you should notice patterns that you take in your daily routine and put up some very small but significant enough barriers that make it a little less easy to do the thing that you're trying to avoid doing. It really can be small. It can be something minor. For me, I shut off all the notifications on my phone, right? That took me 30 seconds to do. My phone usage has dropped dramatically since then. That was just one of those changes that has made an enormous difference in my life in a positive manner and took under a minute to do. So that was an absolute slam dunk. It allows me to now be more intentional about my actual internet and social media usage. If I need to go to the Facebook group to check something, I'm not just meandering to it on my phone because I got 1 of 1,000 notifications that day. No, I'm intentionally sitting down at my laptop, typing in facebook.com and going there. So it's just by putting up that little impediment, it really does make a difference. I also, on the line of phones, is I put my phone in airplane mode at about 8 p.m. at night, and I also shut down my laptop. So that's it. If somebody needs to reach me, that's not happening basically until 7 a.m. the next morning, or even later, potentially, when I take my phone out of airplane mode. When I wake up and I pick my phone up, I don't just reflexively check email or check Facebook or whatever it may be that I always used to do. It was just that little velvet rope made all the difference in the world.
And I'm going to give you 5 other examples that I use. Drink more water. That's one that I struggle with. So I have a dedicated water bottle. I don't just rely on cups, and I fill it up 4 times a day. Now, I'm responsible for drinking those. It's like creating these little systems that make it easier by having a dedicated water bottle and knowing that that's my number. I try to get that first one in as soon as the morning starts, which basically sets the path for the remainder of the day. For productivity with the phone, I do the same thing. I've actually turned off all notifications from Facebook on my phone. I still have Facebook on my phone, but now, in order to see whether or not I've been notified or there's anything that I should be aware of, I actually have to open up the app to see those things. And that would be something that would crush my productivity if I got, 240 notifications a day on Facebook. Third item with eating food. Like, I just don't bring junk food into the house. Literally, if it's not in the house, then you're not going to eat it. So I actually have to go out of my way to purchase junk food to bring it in, because that is not initially there. Now, you have to come up with other velvet ropes when you go into social interactions that you don't have as much control over. Exercise. So we started doing the P90X interval training, which is like a 45-minute workout. And what I've realized is if I'm running by myself, like, I am not going to push myself. I'm not going to get my heart rate up. I don't get motivated. And if my wife tries to push me really hard, then I'm just going to get irritable with her for having kind of stretched me beyond that point. But if we can have Tony be the bad guy, Tony Horton, and he's the one pushing us, and all she has to do is just say, all right, time, let's do it. And then she brings down my workout clothes and we just go get started. Now, I may be irritated. I may not want to do it. But as soon as it starts, I'm going to make it through that 40-minute workout. I may not keep up with them. I may not be at 100%, but I'm doing infinitely more exercise than I was when I was just sitting on the couch typing up my emails or preparing for the next show. Like, it's these little things that move you to a result and don't give you the choice to take the easy way out.
Yeah. And Jonathan, the other thing I liked that David said was about the red carpet technique, which is, what are the little things that you can do to make your life easier? He talked about even something as small as, like, okay, if he needs to write that day, he literally puts it as an action step, open Microsoft Word. How easy is that? And it's almost should be obvious, right? Especially to a writer of David's caliber. But it's those little psychological things. In his case, as he calls these red carpet techniques, that just help the ball rolling psychologically. Once you get moving, it's hard to stop. So really, I think that's a very positive actionable takeaway. Find those little areas in your life that you might be putting up barriers, and just find these tiny, tiny little ways to just get the ball rolling. Another thing I wanted to talk about was Hélène's talk about comfort zone. And she said, once you've pushed your comfort zone, it never goes back. She tries a couple times each year to do something outside of her comfort zone. And what's cool is she notices that it translates into other areas of her life. So she said something to the effect of, like, you become comfortable becoming uncomfortable. I find that in my own life, like, this is definitely true. I'm just like everybody else. I usually take the path of least resistance. I think that's how most of us, I know, Jonathan, you just kind of self-deprecatingly said you do that with, you're lazy, right? But I don't think that's true at all, but I think maybe to you in certain aspects, maybe you do take the path of least resistance, just like we all do. For me, it was always, there are things that I'm scared of, quote unquote. A lot of that came down to public speaking and putting myself out there, being more open to connections and meeting people. And not that I'm some hermit or anything like that, or I had any kind of issue like talking to people. I don't mean to overstate this by any means, but throughout my entire life, public speaking was always something that kind of frightened me. You know, over the last couple of years, especially with this podcast and my websites before then, I've been asked to speak at FinCon on a panel and at Camp Mustache last year, which was a real game changer for me. And it's just made me become so much more comfortable, I think probably in all aspects, but certainly with different avenues of this public speaking. And what was actually cool is one of our Choose FI community members, JJ Heach, he's a teacher in a town outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He teaches at this amazing school called the Insight School in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. And they are doing a course on global business. And part of the course actually is he's teaching them about financial independence. So he had the entire class of 29 listen to our Y of Fi, read some Mr. Money Mustache articles, and just kind of introduce them to all these concepts. And he actually had me Skype in yesterday for an hour presentation and Q&A. As silly as this sounds, that was something that gave me a little bit of anxiety, just because I've never spoken to high school kids. I've never done a presentation like that on Skype. And, you know, you think of all these little things like, oh, I can't do that because. But I'm like, this is going to be fantastic. I have a chance to really, we talk about second generation FIRE. I have a chance to impact people's lives by taking an hour out of my day. So of course I'm going to do that. And it was fantastic. And he got this great feedback at the end of the class. And, you know, for me, it was just pushing those boundaries. And even something as simple as that just made me feel good. And I mean, that's what we're all hoping for, right? We're trying to improve as people and to feel good about ourselves and feel like we're impacting the world in some way. So it was like one of these kind of win-win-win situations.
Yeah, Brad, that's big that you're working through this and that you're actually enjoying the process. You know, it's kind of one of those things where when you make the attempt to tackle this fear point in your life, suddenly that confidence shows up in other areas like you were mentioning. So I'm sure you're going to have plenty more opportunities to do different forms of public speaking in the future, in the coming years. So I'm glad that this is something that you're enjoying working through, not just doing it, but enjoying it. We have so many voicemails to cover this week, and I'm excited to share them. But the one I thought we could start with, going back to this DIY video, Brad, you sharing your DIY attempts over the last couple weeks has inspired Sarah to share hers.
Hi, this is Sarah. It's 1:04 a.m. My husband and I are in our kitchen trying to finish our dishes before we head out of town, and the garbage disposal stopped working. Normally, we would just sort of give up and call our landlord, leave a mound of dirty dishes, and come back to some kind of bill for a garbage disposal repair or fix. But because I've been listening to you guys, I decided to Google it and keep going even when the first answers didn't solve our problem. And we did it! We fixed it ourselves with just tenacity and some YouTube videos. So thank you so much. Super exciting. I'm so proud of us.
I'm so proud of you too. That is like the perfect type of voicemail. And I totally get the excitement that comes when you figure it out. And you're right. The first Google answer is never the one. You got to dig a little bit deeper and figure out how to ask a better question. But that skill set in and of itself is valuable when you go into the next project.
And I love that she left the voicemail at 1:04 a.m. I mean, how amazing is that? That's really cool. I mean, hey, we did it. And here's the voicemail. That was just really, really awesome. So yeah, Sarah, congratulations to you guys. That's neat. And thanks for the voicemail.
All right, this next voicemail I got is from Daniel. To be honest with you, Brad, I consider myself, as you know, kind of a tech geek, and I like finding different ways to use technology to make my life more efficient and generally less expensive. Daniel has some ideas that I haven't even thought of.
Hi, my name's Daniel. I'm a Geeky Fi member. I've always been a thrifty electronics kind of guy. I've been building computers and such since I was about 12. But anyway, my main focus point is on personal electronics and the thriftiness that can go into that, especially in the cell phone market. I feel like one often overlooked area is unlocked cell phones and prepaid self-service. A lot of people, yes, they know the value of not being tied to Verizon and AT&T and such, but I still feel like a huge majority don't get it. A lot of people look at me when they hear I'm on prepaid and I don't have an iPhone, and they look at you like you have, you know, eyes on the back of your head or something. But they don't understand that I've been saving $50, $60 a month when it comes to my cell phone bill, and I've always owned my phones outright. I've always been a fan of the Moto G or E series, which has become a lot more powerful in the last 2 years. But, you know, the Ultra, the sub $250 cell phone market has grown exponentially in the last year or two between Hawaii, Moto, and even now Nokia came back. And you take these phones and you pay, let's say, $200, and you go to Cricket Wireless, AT&T prepaid, you go to T-Mobile prepaid, you go to Google Fi if you have a Pixel or the Google Fi approved phones, and you're only paying $40, $50, $60 a month, as opposed to a lot of my friends tell me they're paying $90, $100. And yeah, Verizon has great 4G service. It's always there, but you pay for it. And you pay for that subsidized iPhone, iPhone 6, iPhone 7, iPhone 8, now iPhone X, where you're paying for it through the contract. And you look at those early termination fees and you're paying $200, $300, $400 even to get out of the contract. They have you, and they get you with the next upgrade, and they extend the contract, and you're just habitually stuck in this contract. So I've always been a big fan of the prepaid segment between simple prepaid wireless, Cricket Wireless, AT&T, and T-Mobile prepaid, where you just take their SIM card, throw in your unlocked phone, and go on your merry way. And I've never had any issues with service, and I've bounced around, and I've had the same cell phone number for the last 15 years, and it's never been an issue. It takes a day to set everything back up. Which brings me to the next point about telecoms, and that's in the internet world and the cable world. A lot of people talk about cord cutting and cutting the wire and not having cable anymore, but really, those same companies still own your internet, so they get you with those bundled deals and the like. Well, one area that I feel like a lot of people don't look at is the rental equipment segment. That area is worth billions of dollars every year with cable boxes and modems and routers. And the most tried and proven modem out there, like the Motorola Surfboard, I think it's 6141, can be had for $50 on Amazon. And you can get a basic, nice wireless AC router for under $100. And for $150 to $200 sunk cost up front, you could be saving $20 a month in rental fees from Verizon or AT&T or Cox Communications or Time Warner. Now, I'm about to get even geekier with it, and I wish I had more time, but there's a great product out there called the HD Home Run by Silicon Dust. There's three different types of tuners. One can be simply used on your network, and you can hook up an over-the-air antenna, a flat wall antenna that you can get for $30 or $40 on Amazon, and you can pick up over-the-air channels. And this tuner can be loaded and recognized by their app on Roku, on Fire TV Stick, on your NVIDIA Shield TV device, or even on your Windows PC. And you can have over-the-air free TV. Now, I've taken it a step higher, and I've had their HD Home Run Prime tuner, which is a cable card tuner. Now, that allows me to receive digital channels when I go to Cox or Comcast and I get their cable card, and actually loads, I can load it in the back of the card. It takes 10 minutes of setup, and you receive all the channels you would if you had digital subscription, and you save $10, $15, $20 between DVR, special box rental fees, and I can share that over my home network. And I can access it from Google TV devices or Android, or and you can go even geekier with it and set up a Plex server and all that stuff. But my point is there's easy ways around your everyday electronics that I know every single person has in their house. Buying your own modem, buying your own router, buying unlocked phones, using prepaid phone service, and you can really cut into these huge fees that these telecoms are charging you. So with that, I wish I could explain it more, but you know, fly on, and I hope that that helps improve people's life.
Buy on. You know, so many of those tactics I employ, but there's stuff there that I haven't done, including, I think, the HD Home Run. That's something I really need to look into. But he has so many actionable tips. And I found the same thing. Who the heck is paying $20 a month for a modem rental? That's crazy talk. Right, Brad?
It is crazy talk. And, you know, that's funny because we do pay for our, I guess, our modem or Wi-Fi router, whatever you want to call it, through Verizon. I think it's like $5 a month. But still, like, this woke me up. I shouldn't be doing that. I should just buy one. And there's no reason to be paying them for the rental fees.
Oh, so, you're paying for rental fees? I had no idea. We can fix you.
All right. Well, do it.
We got to get help, squared obviously. Away. No, but there's so many little things. Like, people don't realize that, yes, you can just buy a modem. You don't have to use the rental service. There's more that he touched on there. Like, I didn't have the HD Home Run box, but I do have a low cost. I have Google Project 5 for my cell phone service. We pay $20 a month for each line, and then we pay $10 a month for each gigabyte of data that we use. For me and my wife, it's usually less than $50 a month. He might even be slightly more optimized. I have not done the prepaid. And as I'm saying this out loud, I'm thinking to myself, I don't really make phone calls anymore. And when I do make phone calls, I'm making them from my Wi-Fi, and using these different Wi-Fi based services, that may not even really count towards minutes anymore. So there might be a way, honestly, that I could even optimize even further if I really wanted to move towards more of a prepaid model. I'm pretty happy with Google Project 5, but I know, Brad, you use Republic Wireless, and I think you pay way less than I do.
Yeah, we pay somewhere between like $12 and $16 a month for each of us. So yeah, $24 to $32 a month combined between Laura and I. So yeah, I mean, it's really, really cheap. And like you said, we're on Wi-Fi probably 98% of the time. And when we're out, the only consideration is don't stream Netflix videos or YouTube videos or something, right? Because those are really, or download podcasts. Those take up data. But other than that, like, when we're out, we're just using data like normal humans. You know, I'm going on Facebook a little bit. I'm checking my Gmail. I'm maybe checking an item on the New York Times or something like that. I mean, just little things. But I'm a normal cell phone user, I think. And yeah, the data is so insignificant that it winds up only costing me, like I said, under $16 a month.
So next, we have a success story to share with you. Jacqueline got informed by her boss that she was getting a pay decrease and used it as an incentive to find a new gig.
Hey guys, it's Jacqueline Murray. I'm responding to your weekly post on what we did during that week to make our life better, more successful. I recently received notification from my employer last week that they are going to be decreasing my salary 13%. The long and the short story behind that is that I voluntarily took a demotion last year because I was working 8, 9, 10 hour days, working weekends, and it was starting to take a toll on me. And I just had enough of it. So anyway, I just was informed last week that I'm going to be decreased 13%. I quickly put out some feelers to some friends in the industry, and I am anticipating a job offer next week for, if all goes well, and I don't want to jinx it, but a 18% increase over what I'm currently making or was currently making. So anyway, that is quite a big change, and I'm very excited about it. A little bit about my background. I'm 46 years old. I'm a sink. I have a dog, and I own two properties. My primary residence is a two-story townhouse in the San Francisco Bay Area. I moved up here to take a new job from Southern California. I kept my original property in Southern California. I currently rent that out, cash flow positive. And I am also house hacking my current residence. I rent out my spare bedroom to a tenant. The only debt I carry is the mortgages on my two properties. And as of February 2017, I am in the Net Worth to Comma Club. And I'm a Dave Ramsey convert. And I've been following Mr. Money Mustache. I looked in my emails to see when the first blog subscription started coming through. And it looks like I've been officially on this path since February of 2013, although I've been a super saver my entire life. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. I thank you for your time and thank you for your podcast and appreciate all of the information and everything that I've learned from them. Have an awesome day.
And Jacqueline, we just want to take a second and celebrate you. What an accomplishment. And that is incredible. And we're so excited for this transition and what it means for you. So congratulations again. Brad, this next voicemail that I want to play is actually from Steven. And this goes back to that episode that we did with the two CFPs. And in that episode, we were talking a little bit about capital gains tax. Steven wants to share a strategy on how you can use donor advised funds to avoid said tax.
Hello. I just wanted to leave a thought on the episode with the CFPs. One way to harvest some of the gains, if you have a lot of gains in a taxable account, if you are making charitable contributions, you can donate appreciated assets, or I believe you could even transfer those into a donor advised fund. And then that would allow you, if you made charitable contributions, to take the deduction without taking the capital gains. I enjoy your show. Thanks for what you do.
And Brad, I know that going into the end of 2017, this was something that you were specifically looking at.
Yeah, that's right. Donor advised funds, I was made aware of them through Frugal Woods and through Physician on Fire. They both have, I think they have multiple articles on donor advised funds at each site, and we'll definitely link to those in the show notes. But I had never heard of this previously, but I guess with the tax law changing in 2018, there was some significant movement towards people donating to these donor advised funds. And please don't think that this isn't valid going forward. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But it was especially applicable at the end of 2017 for our situation. And basically, when you donate to one of these donor advised funds, you actually have control of this fund going forward. So you get the tax deduction in that year for the fair market value of the securities or property or cash or whatever it may be that you're transferring over to this donor advised fund. And then from there on out, that's like making a donation in essence. You cannot just take the money back at some future point. So yeah, so this is something you really want to strongly consider because you are obviously in essence making a donation to some charity. But how it works is you actually can decide when you want to transfer the money to those charities in the future. And you can hold these for years and decades potentially. So that money can grow inside this donor advised fund, which is actually really pretty cool. And the reason we took advantage of it was because the standard deduction was changing in 2018 and forward. And we knew that if we made our donations to charity in 2017 via this donor advised fund, that we could get the deduction in 2017 and then allocate the money as we saw fit going forward in future years. So it seemed like a slam dunk to us in that case. And luckily, that's one of the nice things about having assets is you can make choices from a position of strength, because Fidelity has a minimum of $5,000 to open one of these donor advised funds. And actually, that's the lowest I saw. I think Vanguard has a $25,000 minimum to open a donor advised fund. And that was way beyond certainly what we wanted to put in. So the Fidelity one made a lot of sense. And to Stephen's point, the way that it works is, yes, you can donate appreciated assets and never have to pay the capital gains tax. So you're just donating it at fair market value. You get the tax deduction for that fair market value. And even if, let's say, you bought those securities for a dollar, right, and they're worth $100,000 now, you are never paying the capital gains tax on that $99,999. That's gone forever. You've donated it, and that built-in tax event is no longer applicable to you. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of a cool little hack. And actually, I took a very unconventional way of doing this just because of the timing. I mean, I made this decision to do this, I think, on December 28th. So there wasn't a lot of time to get this done by December 31st. So it was just these random little bit of money lying around. And it actually worked out that that was what we wanted to donate. So what was interesting was most of them had built-in gains. So we just transferred those over. But one particular stock, I think it was like Lending Club. I used to be involved in that peer-to-peer lending, and I got involved in their IPO. And the stock has like tanked since then. So I actually had a built-in loss, a significant loss. So what I did was I sold that stock and realized the loss. So I get the loss on my 2017 taxes and then transferred that cash over as cash, which obviously is just fair market value as cash, and then got the deduction for the donation to charity. So I think we donated a little bit over $5,000. We got the deduction for that. And we got like a $3,000 capital loss. So we ended up getting to take like $8,000 deduction on our tax return in 2017 for a $5,000 donation. So again, just based on the timing of this, it just worked out perfectly that we got this huge deduction. We are donating this money to charity in future years, and it really worked out great.
I would love to explore the strategy with donor advised funds further for our community. So we'll have to figure out a way to turn that into a full episode. And I know that Physician on Fire has talked about that at length. So I was thinking he might be a great guest to bring back on the show for this year and see if we can make that happen.
Yeah. And like I said, just real quick, this is not only applicable to 2017. I think it certainly is valid going forward. And depending on where you are on the standard deduction and how close you are with itemized deductions going forward, I think there's definitely a play here where, and we've talked about this before, Jonathan, where you can kind of front load all of your charitable contributions into 1 year over a 2 year period. So you could do it at the end of December 2018 for 2018 and 2019. I know you talked about people who tithe. That would be, if you could do a 2 year contribution, but do it in one calendar year, then almost invariably you're going to be over the standard deduction limit and actually be able to itemize your deductions on your tax return and get some benefit from this. So I think there is definitely still is a play with this donor advised fund, and also being able to maximize charitable contributions by just being that little bit smarter. So yeah, to be continued for sure, but please know that this is applicable going forward.
And you know, Brad, talking about making some changes, getting ready for going in from 2017 to 2018, and the reality of how these small changes can add up to very real dollars, I have a voicemail that I want to play from Alan. And this is actually funny, because if you've been in the Choosify Facebook group for any period of time, you will recognize Alan's name. He is the guy that points out market timing when he sees it. And he's actually built a little bit of a infamous reputation around having these go-to images or these go-to memes that he drops anytime he feels like market timing is coming into place. So that doesn't have anything to do with this voicemail, but I am excited to share this voicemail with you.
Hey, Jonathan and Brad, this is Alan from your Facebook group, longtime listener, first time caller. I'd like to share a mini windfall that I was able to engineer as a result of discussions and articles from the Choose FI group. In December, I was strategizing on how to save on taxes in 2017, and I learned that since the 2018 standard deduction was doubling with the new tax bill, $12,000 to $24,000, I'd probably never itemize again. Based on tips and threads from your Facebook group, I decided to do three things. I paid my 2017 property taxes in December instead of January. I prepaid my charitable giving for 2018 in December, and I also prepaid my January mortgage payment at the end of December. By simply accelerating $17,000 of expenses a little bit earlier than I needed to pay them, at the 25% tax bracket, that acceleration of expenses and additional deductions in 2017 saved me over $4,000. I went from owing Uncle Sam $4,000 to him paying me $450. Not only do I have almost 4,500 more Little Green employees in my Vanguard account now, working hard every day to earn me money, but I also enjoyed the satisfaction of paying Uncle Sam $4,500 less, and that always puts a little extra pep in my step. That was one simple tweak to the timing of my cash flows, but it resulted in a ton of savings. It's like you guys always say, the aggregation of marginal gains adds up, and we should be constantly optimizing to be just a little bit better than yesterday. Thank you for building this community where we can help each other stick it to the man and support each other on this journey to financial independence. See ya.
Little Green employees. I think we need to use that going forward. That's just awesome. So yeah, Alan, thank you for the voicemail and yeah, congratulations. And that ties in perfectly to what I was just talking about with the donor advised fund. It's thinking a little bit more deeply, right? And just making decisions that are more optimized and work out well for you. It's just all about education. Everything comes back to that. It's just knowing that it's even possible. So in your case, making those couple changes on your 2017 return in December gave you that $4,500 swing. And that's absolutely brilliant. So yeah, really, really well done.
All right, now this last voicemail that I want to play for you today is actually from Kevin. And if you remember, going back about a month to the episode that we did about medical tourism, on that Friday roundup, Kevin reached out to us and said that he's very interested in exploring creating possibly a new insurance company that meets some of the needs that the FI community has already been stressing, that we know there's a hole here. What would it be like to actually focus on solving the problem? He made a pitch that he's kind of uniquely positioned to see it from all these different sides, and this is something that he wants to continue to explore and just wanted to gauge interest in this idea. Obviously, we are interested in this. Health insurance is something that we have a lot of little techniques, but by no means do we have the perfect solution for. And so it's one of these things where one of the things that we can do is we can continue the conversation and hopefully we can connect people. And if we can connect the right people, maybe something can happen here. But this voicemail, I think, will be very informative.
Hey, Brad and Jonathan, this is Kevin from Colorado. I've previously spoken to Jonathan about healthcare, and I'm calling in with some updates. A few weeks ago, Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan announced a joint venture to reduce healthcare costs for their combined million-plus employees by applying technology, buying power, and tools. I don't expect a huge impact from this unless they open it up to other companies, but health insurance stocks did drop on the news. One thing Jonathan wanted me to mention is negotiated bundles. This is a relatively new concept which allows larger companies and self-insured ones to negotiate with the highest quality hospitals around the country to provide a set rate for specific procedures like hip and knee replacements, gastric bypass, or other common but expensive procedures. The company benefits from a significantly lower price than local, and it's usually cheap enough that they can completely cover the cost of travel for the patient and at least one family member. The healthcare systems benefit from signing up for this because they get a much larger pool of potential patients, as well as the publicity that goes with it, even though the hospital ends up being responsible for all pre-procedure testing, the actual surgery or procedure, as well as all post-care and any complications. Now, a lot of people have asked me why insurance expense and healthcare costs keep going up, and if there's anything that can be done about it. One thing that has been mentioned here before is the healthshare ministries, such as MediShare and LibertyShare. These are great programs and can definitely save you money, but they do come with a number of significant restrictions, including certain requirements on religious affiliation, limits on chronic conditions and care, upper limits on how much can be paid out, and usually not covering basic expenses such as medical checkups, pharmacy costs, or other limitations like procedures. Because of this, it's great if it works for you, but it won't really replace insurance for the majority of people. One of the reasons that all this is so expensive is because there is a significant lack of incentives for healthcare systems and insurers to cut costs. Traditionally, this is because healthcare systems and providers have been paid under a fee-for-service schedule, which means that the more they do, the more they get paid. This is starting to change with different value-based efforts and measurements, but it's still got a long ways to go. Likewise, insurers also have limited incentive to cut costs because they normally get paid on a percentage of the total expenses that get paid out. This will change over time, and I do believe there is another way where I can bring FI principles in to improve this. For the last several years, I've actually been working on an idea to try to address many of the gaps that I've seen. When you look at it historically, 5 to 10% of all patients end up accounting for 80 to 90% of the total costs, similar to the Pareto principle. This means there is a big opportunity for huge savings if you can reduce the cost for that 5 to 10% of patients. I believe that an insurance company that is formed and focused on price transparency, using negotiated bundles, forcing systems to compete with each other on a combination of price and quality will generate significant savings and a better value. This is five principles at its best. I've taken this idea and discussed with many different healthcare professionals, executives, business owners, entrepreneurs, and other professionals whose experience I trust. And a lot of people express concern that it won't work because nobody else is doing this, but they can't exactly put their finger on anything that would keep it from working. I'm working very heavily on details, and I will provide more as I get them available. In the meantime, if you have any questions, please feel free to ask, and I'll catch you all later with another update. Thanks.
Brad, I know this is an idea that excites me. It's a little scary. It's a little bit like, who's giving us permission to even explore this idea? Don't you have to be Warren Buffett or Jeff Bezos or some person with millions and billions of dollars in order to pull this off? But I wonder if maybe there's any power, any weight in just having a groundswell around an idea. Does that add anything to the equation? I'm not sure, but I think the conversation is so valuable because we all just kind of stand on the sidelines and saying, oh, what a horrible problem. Who's going to fix this? And my guiding principle more and more is there is no they. It's just you.
Yeah, I know you've really latched onto that quote, the there is no they. And I think you heard that on another podcast. And yeah, that's something that is really important. Like, we all need to take action. This is a perfect case in point. We all know the healthcare system is broken, and we as a FI community, maybe we can make a little difference in our own way, or if not, maybe we can just get an answer for our community. If that's the worst thing that happens here, or if frankly, if the worst thing that happens is we look into this and Kevin looks into this and tries and it doesn't happen, what did we waste, right? We wasted a couple minutes on this podcast talking about it, but this is so exciting if we can actually make this happen. So yeah, I mean, I would say if anyone has any expertise or knowledge in this area, just reach out to us at feedback@choosefi.com and maybe we can hook you up with Kevin and you could lend your expertise and maybe we can really try to make this happen.
All right, guys. Well, unfortunately, that's going to bring this episode to a close. Now, as you know, we like to finish every episode by doing a drawing for a copy of a book that we have found useful. And there's a couple books that we do. J.L. Collins' book, The Simple Path to Wealth, Dominic Cortuccio's book, Design Your Future, and Vincent Puglisi's book, Freelance to Freedom. If you want to enter this drawing, all you have to do, just go to choosefi.com/iTunes, follow the instructions there, leave us a written review, and then send us an email to feedback@choosefi.com, letting us know that you left a review and what screen name you left it under. If you don't have iTunes and you don't want to download iTunes, but you still want to enter the drawing, on that same page, choosefi.com/iTunes, there's a link to Stitcher. You can leave us a review there as an alternative and follow the exact same process and be eligible for the drawing. So Brad, how many winners do we have today?
All right, Jonathan, we have one winner today, and the winner is Paul, and he actually left the review on Stitcher. So thanks, Paul, for heading over there and leaving the review. Paul said, actionable financial advice. ChooseFI is the ultimate financial independence podcast. We somehow found it right when they were getting started, and it quickly became our favorite podcast. While we still love Afford Anything, Radical Personal Finance, Mad Scientist, Bigger Pockets, The New Bigger Pockets Money, Impact Theory, and Tim Ferriss Show, we are always most excited about new episodes of ChooseFI. We've been inspired to cut our expenses, invest more into our 401ks, dive headfirst into travel awards, and we've been able to discuss personal finance and financial independence with friends and family in a way that wouldn't have been possible before. ChooseFI blends a healthy mix of actionable items on personal finance as well as health and mindset. Thanks, Brad and Jonathan.
That is so awesome, man. Thank you so much for leaving that review. And Brad, we are now approaching, probably within the next 30 days, 1,000 reviews. 1,000 reviews. That's incredible. Thank you to our community for those of you that have taken a couple minutes out of your day to do that. And this drawing will keep on going because honestly, guys, it is like the single best way you can help us. If you got value from the show today, if you've been getting value from the episodes, just take 1 second, press the subscribe button on the platform that you're listening to this on. It just lets the providers know that you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional episodes. The fire is spreading, my friends. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth, one life hack at a time.